SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Old Del Mar, Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com as well. And coming to you from the paddock, overlooking the paddock at Del Mar and Hammer with me, of course, again. And good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Great to be here after a long day yesterday.
You turned it off again.
Good morning, Steve. We'll get the equipment turned on here, right? But it's good to be out here again, overlooking the paddock here at Del Mar, and another little overcast morning, which it normally is here. And yesterday it turned into be a typical, beautiful Del Mar afternoon in the 70s, a little breeze, and a beach day. Didn't make the beach, but maybe today with the late post we'll head down to the sand. Well, and, you know, Steve, we sit here in the dark as it's getting a little bit lighter. You see the horses coming into the paddock here, and either they have a choice. They can either make the right turn and head under the grandstand and head out to the racetrack as they would for a race, or some of them are literally just schooling in the paddock. In other words, getting the horse used to being in there. They'll stand them in the stall, get them ready, so when game time comes, they behave. But you see all the work and the dedication that goes on to prepare a racehorse to get ready to race. It's not just how fast they are on the racetrack. It's how they need to behave at various places throughout the preparation. And to see the dedication, I just saw Carlos here works for Simon Callahan. Yesterday he was on horse, leading horses around. Today he was hand-walking horses around, standing him in the paddock. I mean, it's 6 o'clock in the morning. These guys start early, and you know, to see, like I said, the dedication and the work that goes in to each individual horse to get them ready for different facets of the race. And it all has to go well that day to perform well. So it's the little things that you see why maybe some guys do better than others, because they take care of the little things.
And it's an individual experience, and undoubtedly based on, you know, on the behavior of a horse. I can remember Bruce Headley having a conversation. I've talked about this before, and when he passed not long ago, he told me once, sitting at Santa Anita, we were talking different, I don't even know how it came up, but he talked about that he didn't like to school horses, that he thought in some cases it would provide an opposite effect and make them nervous by the time, you know, they come over to actually race. So he eschewed the concept of the, you know, of schooling and familiarity. But I think, you know, he was an offbeat horseman that learned. He told me he learned the horsemanship literally from a guy that took a Conestoga wagon to get to the West, an actual cowboy that came to California like in 1880.
He probably did. But, right, everybody does something different, and as long as the end result is there, it's fine. I forget who told me one time about when they shipped horses into a new track using that concept. Rather than taking them, let's say, to the paddock over and over and maybe having a noise that happened there that they weren't used to, that when he took them over for the race, that the horse would be looking for that same type of noise. So rather than taking them over fresh the first time, sometimes works. So, and each individual horse is different. Some need, you know, to work out of the gate over and over and over, and some, you know, handle it very well. But it is amazing. You know, and I still don't know who wrote that rule when way back when, that we have to start training at 5 in the morning. It's right?
What I choice?
Mean, no. I mean, because at Oakland, we start when the sun comes up, which is about 7. So we don't start training until 7 o'clock.
I've never noticed that, actually.
And it's the greatest thing in the world. I mean, people sleep in a little bit. I remember we had a power outage at Santa Anita for, I don't know, 10 years ago or something, and we couldn't start training until, same thing. Sometimes I think we started at 8 for a month at a time. And, you know, it got done. We fixed the power. We fixed everything. We had to go back. And people were like, well, why do we have to start at 5 in the morning?
Why can't we?
And, you know, it still gets done. It's amazing.
That's funny.
So I know out here, I think we opened the track at 5:15. And I'm telling you, if it wasn't open, that phone was ringing at 5:17. What's going on? How come the Outriders aren't opening the track? Or, you know.
Well, Bill Spahr had been on the track since 3:30.
Well, exactly. Bill Spahr, I mean, you drive in at 7:30, he was driving out. He's done. He's still that way. And, you know, they all get used to it. But it just cracks me up that, you know, who said we have to work horses in the dark? Why can't we wait until a little bit later in the morning? But it's always been that way. And I'll tell you, it's one job or one place you can come. And you're never the first one here. You think you're here early.
That's a good point.
You get here at 5. You drive in. The parking lot's full. There's activity. So you got no shot of being the first one to work at a racetrack.
I love it. A couple of things as we wade into the weekend preview, to Inspire's weekend preview. And there's, you know, obviously a ton to look forward to. And that starts right here at Del Mar with Pacific Classic Day. You got two Win and You're In races, the Classic for the Classic, and the Del Mar Handicap for the Turf. Actually, they ended up putting the Del Mar Handicap behind the Pacific Classic. 6:30 Pacific, 9:30 Eastern post, so Saturday, long Saturday ahead for everybody. And the 10 o'clock Eastern post for the Del Mar Handicap. So for those that like that, you know, like to wrap up their East Coast and middle of the country action and then, you know, settle in tomorrow, a really good opportunity for that. They also are going to sweat out, I imagine. Yesterday, they're looking to force out the pick six tomorrow here. And yesterday, because of a 55-to-1 shot of Steve Knapp's, there were four horses live to clear the pool, which you know, would have kind of taken the rug out from everybody that is looking forward to, you know, trying to take down this jackpot pick six force out. So they got by yesterday with one of the favorites winning the nightcap, and as a result, they got to get through today, and then keep that in mind. I think 1.7 million going into today.
We're looking at the TV behind us.
Look at that.
So as Steve said, one more. Carryovers 1.75 today. Let's knock on wood for Del Mar that it doesn't get hit. Maybe add another buck and a half to that today. Approaching 2 million going into Saturday. Not as good as predicting when we used to in the old days with the old pick six, but I got to think it's going to be between 8 and 10 million total when it's all said and done on Saturday. And that begins with race 6 with the Torrey Pines on Saturday, races 6 through 11. So we'll keep that in the back of our minds and head into it. You know, a little bit of a... And I don't want to call it controversy, a little bit of a decision to make for Del Mar, whether to go back to the traditional $2 pick six. They went back and forth and decided to go with the jackpot. And, you know, it has its pluses and minuses. I guess, you know, I'll end up playing it. I mean, most people end up playing it. I didn't, because none of my money is in that 1.75 million. So I guess it's a good deal for the bonus, and it makes a big day bigger. So I understand that part. Still, some people that would like to see the old $2 pick six, and New York has morphed into the $1 pick six, and I think it's really gone well.
The couple of things that I want to slip in here before Brad Free joins us, and let me give you a quick rundown of what's going on. Brad Free will kick it off this morning, and we'll get Brad's opinions on that sequence. The sixth, and I think there's only the one race that there's only one non-stake in the sequence, the eighth. Then Nick Tamaro early. And if you didn't see the announcement, which has been pending for just about a week, they thought it was going to be last week, Nick Tamaro named officially. It was kind of anticipated. But Nick, who had been calling the quarter horse meet at Sam Houston Race Park, Nick named the full-time successor to Chris Griffin, and he will call the thoroughbred meet and the quarter horse action. So delighted for Nick, and you'll also get, undoubtedly, you'll get his on-air handicapping stylings for Sam Houston, with, you know, which they've thrown the kitchen sink at horse players with the likes of Trey Styles and all kinds of good opinions added to their telecast. We'll get Nick's thoughts this morning early, actually, and it worked out. He said, can I get on early? I said, sure, because later in the show we're actually got a couple of live visitors. Joe Harper will be here, as will Joe Bravo. Joe Bravo, I see him everywhere I go. I run into Joe Bravo. Last night we went to Sabine, and which was terrific, with the Hammer and Gina and Tina and I, and we walk in. First we see Bat Masterson, who was out on the patio. Then you walk through toward your table, and here's Bravo and Drayden Van Dyke. And then on the way out, also
Tom Reynolds.
Tom Reynolds was there, and it's a nice, great scene in the village at Del Mar. So Joe Harper, Joe Bravo will be by. We'll talk Queen's Plate twice this morning, and I haven't even had a chance to dive into the Queen's Plate with everybody, but a nice field and a terrific weekend. Stakes Saturday, Sunday, the Seaway and the Ontario Colleen and the Highlander, and just two terrific, terrific days for Woodbine's summer feature. And we'll talk to Ernie Peary. We'll get some binocular action from clocking angle with Ernie. We've got Ron Gierkink to start hour three as well. We'll get Ron's thoughts on the weekend at Woodbine. Obviously, the other big, the other big slate for the weekend. What else? We got Ed. We'll get to Ed and James in hour two. We'll get Hammer's opinions. Jay Pribman and Jay by phone. Jay's got some writing to do, so he's home. We'll talk to him, and looking forward to seeing Jay tomorrow. And I think that might be it. We might slip in. I might have to slip in Dave Grenig at some point if I get a window. The situation at Saratoga is soggy. I don't know how else to define it. Escape just in time, frankly, and feel bad for everybody that has to go through this relentless storm that that ended up with flooding. The infield lake is expanded, and you had Clare Court that was flooded yesterday. So kind of a mess. And they got through the card fine yesterday, and actually was pleased to get that Vegas weekend home, as what a terrific race that horse ran for Fausto Gutierrez. And he had a slight, call it a modest upset, because awesome debate for Bruce Brown. Congratulations to Bruce, that horse that Charlie Baker bred for Van Vranken Racing and NRB Racing with Louis Saez, who is just, Saez is pulling away here from everybody else on the jockey standing side. But in the Union Avenue, in the State Bred Stake yesterday, awesome debate. Basically just attached herself to Sadie Lady, who was 3-5, and ended up off the board. But Naira, when it comes to these kinds of races, they actually, they very frequently, no show betting. So they save, probably save the show plungers from themselves, right? So we go into the weekend, and the Alabama tomorrow and the Lake Placid, I'm sure they'll do everything in their power to keep the Lake Placid on the turf tomorrow. And we'll see about how much more rain is involved here. But ideally, the Lake Placid stays on the turf tomorrow. And the Alabama, the mile and a quarter standard tomorrow, and those two stakes, part start of the cross country with the 9th, 10th, and 11th here at Santa Anita, at Del Mar. A quick review, because if I don't do it now, it may slip through the cracks. Remington's Thoroughbred Meet starts today, Hammer, and you actually have got a terrific, the mile and eighth Governor's Cup, which drew a terrific field of 10, led by Plainsman for Brad Cox, but by no means, you know, any kind of layover on this group. You've got Rated R Superstar for Villafranco in here. I thought Guided Missile for Boyd Caster had a bit of a look. Tenfold for Asmussen, as well as Tappet Wise. Broberg with the wonderful Hunk of Burning Love is 8-1. And Trident Hit for Moquette as well, 6-1. So a very nice kickoff to the Remington Thoroughbred season. And speaking of Remington and the region, I did see yesterday Mary Rampolini reported Scott Wells is going to retire after an incredible career. He's tough to get on the record. He's tough to put a microphone in front of Scott Wells. But not just an outstanding career in North America, but went down and helped the Uruguayans reboot Morones as well.
Long time. Don't know Scott Wells well. But anytime you get someone like him, he's managed numerous racetracks over the years, and anyone can stay in that position that long and go out with a smile is good. So congratulations to Scott. You mentioned that group at Remington.
Yeah.
I mean, I bet you look at those PPs, and I haven't in a while. Those guys have faced each other, be it Oaklawn, Remington, Lone Star, all throughout the Midwest for years. That group gets together. Solid group, hard knockers, and we'll see whose turn it is today there. But yeah, Remington gets going. Anyone that's never been to Remington,
I love it. I love Remington.
It's kind of like a little Canterbury Park in a sense,
and Indiana Grant. They're very similar. They've got that, especially I haven't been to Canterbury yet, but especially Remington and Indiana reminded immediately of Remington.
Right. So driving through. I don't know if people do as much driving that I do, so every once in a while, going through Oklahoma City, I'll check the thing, and if they have a night card, we'll make a little plan and make a pit stop and hit the races and do a little Oklahoma run. I'm going back and forth. But anywhere near there, they run until mid-December, I believe. So if you've never been to Remington Park, Clean's facility, they do a really good job there. Just kind of like a track you don't think of until you're driving by it or somebody mentions it. So a great spot to spend an afternoon or evening.
And one of the few racinos that when you go up to the casino, which is on the second floor, there is a viewing area that overlooks the racetrack. So that that players in the casino can actually see that there's horses. They're shocked to see horses that are running. A few other notes. You've got Louisiana Downs. They've got the Louisiana Cup tomorrow afternoon. I don't want to let that slip through. You've got a series of six stakes, $60,000, $50,000 stakes for the Louisiana Cup. The Pimlico meet is winding down, and it's really been amazing to look at the Maryland Signal and have Pimlico, you know, continue on. So, you know, these last few months, it's done great duty, and it just shows what a valuable facility, at least a valuable racetrack it is. But the Pimlico season is winding down, and they'll move over. They got Timonium coming up and then back to Laurel. But you've got a nice series of stakes as well. Four $75,000 stakes at Pimlico. The Philip Island tomorrow at Monmouth. I wanted to make sure people noted that the Grade 3 goes tomorrow. They got a group of seven in there led by Code of Honor. How about Shuggy sending Code of Honor down to Oceanport?
Well, Shug has always been a supporter of Monmouth Park and sent many a winner down there. And you said something there. The Grade 3, Philip Island, I can remember not that long ago, was a Grade 1. Was part of the American Championship Racing Series. It was, I think it was 1990. And I think the last Grade 1 winner for that was Smart Strike. came down and won. I believe that was the last time that that was a grade one. It was the last horse that won. Skipaways won it. I think we put 131 pounds on him, and he held on and beat a Mark Canning horse by a nose. A lot of nice horses ran in the Philip Islam, and it's kind of a shame to see it down to a grade three, but glad to see it still running.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. We're going to reach for Brad Free, and I do see, thanks to our friend Leslie Knopf, who's got an eye on the Ybor Festival at York. And who you got?
We're talking about the training and things going on. We've been talking for about 9 minutes since we came on. This horse right here with the rider has gone around the paddock maybe 20 times, nice and slow. And he's been very well behaved, but maybe that's because they do this every morning. But I've been sitting here kind of not counting, but just kind of watching him just go around and around. And, a little extra care from the Doug O'Neill barn. And hopefully when he comes in here on race day, he'll be just fine. They got leaf blowers going on. They got people picking up trash. And so these are some of the distractions that might be on race day, and it gets him used to it. And here he comes around again for another lap. So,
and he seems like he's getting a little anxious at this point to call it quits and maybe go home and have some breakfast. And there he goes. Yep. Actually, that, you know what? That's not, I don't think that's a he. I think that's a filly. and a pretty filly. Brad Free's going to join us here momentarily, and we'll get things rolling. And we'll start right in on some handicapping action. Let me see if there's anything else that may have left out this morning, but I think
I'll throw in one plug here. Yeah. Just a reminder to horsemen and owners that are out there. Wednesday coming up, August 25th. All stake nominations are due for the stakes at Kentucky Downs. So the nominations for every stake for the entire 6-day meet close on Wednesday, August 25th. So it's kind of neat. Just close them all in one day. They'll be out a few days later, and everyone will be able to check it out. So give me a call. Call Tyler. Call anybody in the Ellis Park Racing Office. Ellis Park, a lot of the guys there work in Kentucky. But get a hold of us, or we'll be calling you if you don't call us. But just a quick reminder, because that meet comes up pretty quick.
Coming up right now, Brad Free of the Daily Racing Form. Brad, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, Hammer. I'm looking forward to joining you guys this weekend at Del Mar for some outstanding racing, including tomorrow's card. Pacific Classic 5 graded stakes, mandatory payout in the jackpot pick 6, so should be a fun weekend.
Well, mandatory payout, Brad, assuming that that after yesterday's flirtation with a payout that they get through today.
Well, yesterday was a bizarre day. I think it was the first card this summer in which I didn't pick a single winner. Some of them I still can't figure out how they won even after the fact. So it was one of those days that you just chalk up as a statistical or an aberration and just move forward. But, you know, with a 20-cent minimum, this thing, this rainbow pick six scheme, and that's what it is. It's basically a scheme. It turns handicapping and horse racing into a virtual lottery. But there is one good day to play, and that's mandatory payout day. I doubt there will be a single ticket winner today. If there is, I'll be surprised. But tomorrow should be a lot of fun because there's no real complete and total standout, at least according to the morning line, in the six races that comprise the pick six tomorrow. So it should be competitive racing, and yeah, there won't be a single ticket winner this afternoon.
Let's dive in then, Brad, and the Torrey Pines, in terms of the sequence, let's start with it and work our way through to the handicap. And five of the six races in the sequence are stakes, and here are the three-year-old fillies going a mile on the dirt.
Yeah, this is a bizarre race because, you know, most of the fillies in this one-mile race are sprinters. In fact, five of them are stretching out from sprints. Only three of them have ever routed, and the two favorites are both running long for the first time, those being Private Mission at 9 to 5 and Forest Caraway. They're both stretching out. They're both lightly raced, and I think that they're the right horses, the most likely winners. But, boy, when you're playing a pick six or any sequential wager, if you put all your eggs into a basket of a couple of fillies trying to do something that they never have done, yeah, I think you're asking for trouble. Yeah, I think Private Mission can stay a mile. I also think Forest Caraway can stay a mile. But I don't know that with any certainty at all because they've never done it. Lady Mystify and Lisette, numbers 1 and 2, they both are moving up in class after winning route races, but their route races were not particularly fast. So this is, to me, the most puzzling race in the entire sequence just because of the uncertainty with regards to Private Mission and Forest Caraway and their ability to stay two turns. I think they can, but I don't know that for sure.
Who'd you end up you ended up with Private Mission on top?
Private Mission over Forest Caraway, and really the deciding factor was that Forest Caraway is trying to come back in only 20 days, whereas Private Mission has had 2 months between starts, and she earned a bigger figure. There's more to handicapping than just one-dimensional identify the high figure and go on with it. But Private Mission with 2 months between starts, I think that she's likely to set the pace, and I think that she can be long gone. But Forest Caraway was impressive. I wish she had a little bit more than 3 weeks between her comeback and Torrey Pines on Saturday.
Well, a couple of oddballs to at least bring up, and I mentioned yesterday when I gave everybody a quick blueprint of the races beside the Pack Classic. I'm So Anna from Steve Sherman that arrived down here and won the Fleet Treat and doesn't necessarily, well, she may... I guess she does kind of need the lead to win. That's been really her MO when she's been successful. I guess going back to that maiden breaker at Los Al, but that was 5 furlongs. She stalked, but I'm So Anna not impossible here.
Well, she's the most accomplished filly in the field. She's a multiple stakes winner in minor restricted stakes races. She can run long, and if she can avoid a duel with Private Mission, I think that Private Mission is a little bit quicker than I'm So Anna. So I'm So Anna could conceivably get a really comfortable trip sitting second behind Private Mission, and if Private Mission cannot stay the trip, well then I'm So Anna will get first run. I'm So Anna is my third preference in the race. I respect her. She's a four-time winner, multiple stakes winner, and she can get the trip. So, you know, I think she has to be on your ticket unless you're in love with one of the stretch-outs, and I'm not.
Well, and one other stretch-out to mention, just because he's so effective, although he's struggled down here so far this summer, Jonathan Wong won for 26 coming into this week, and Day Plan for Tommytown coming off of an allowance win at Pleasanton, and before that, maiden breaker at Golden Gate. But, you know, from a fig standpoint, Brad, also a kind of a nibbler that's within range of the obvious players.
Well, she's also getting better. Each of her recent starts has been a little bit better than the one before, according to the buyer speed figures. Nice win last time out up at Pleasanton. And you're right about Jonathan Wong. It's very bizarre because when you're handicapping Northern California, you know, anytime that Wong has a starter, you have to take a second look. At Del Mar, it's tough. I remember for years when Jerry Hollendorfer was the king of Northern California, he would come down to Del Mar and get his head handed to him summer after summer, and then he finally decided to focus on Southern California, and then he began to win races, Hollendorfer did. In a way, it's kind of similar with Jonathan Wong. He's the star in Northern California, but Southern California is a completely different circuit. It's tougher, and Wong has had a little bit of a difficult time getting things you know, going at the rate that we expect him to see based on his Northern California situation. So Wong will come out of it. He's not having a good summer, but that could change in a hurry.
5 seconds, though, and 5/3. So this is sort of the MO that we were seeing from George Weaver back at Saratoga. George was a one-fer, and he had, I think, this going into this week, he had like 8 seconds. So some of that is, you know, is like roulette and just having the peg fall. I imagine, Brad, as we turn to the Del Mar Mile, I imagine big-ticket players are going to hit the all button in this thing.
In the, if you're talking about the Del Mar Mile, I couldn't disagree with you more.
No. In the Torrey Pines.
Well, I mean, I think if you're playing the pick six, you have to have every filly in the race on at least a substitute ticket.
Exactly.
Yeah, you might press with the two favorites, which is probably what I'll end up doing, but you have to use them all because it just looks like one of those races with so much uncertainty that you can't be positive what might happen.
I agree. Let's turn to that Del Mar Mile. And I said I think yesterday I added up the wins, and I think 37 wins between these six combatants in the mile.
This is a really, really good field. I mean, you talk about some veterans, and they're all doing what they do best, or most of them are anyway, and that's run a mile on grass. A mile and 1/8 was probably a little bit too far last time out for Smooth Like Straight. Hit the Road, loves Del Mar, runs well fresh. Hit the Road and Smooth Like Straight, both grade one winners at a mile on turf. But when you get right down to it, who's the best horse in the race? It has to be Mo Forza. He came in off a 7-month layoff in this race last year and went a mile in 33-1. He came right back a few weeks later and ran a mile in 132 at Santa Anita. Mo Forza might have been the favorite in the Breeders' Cup Mile last fall, but he got hurt and he was sidelined since then. He's coming back off a 10-month layoff this time. Peter Miller has him ready to roll. Miller said he's, quote, good now. He's kind of fragile. He's only started 12 times, but when he runs his race, and he usually does, he's one tough customer. I think he's the most probable winner. I think he's the most probable winner in the pick six, and I'm going to probably end up singling him, at least on a main ticket. I think that Mo Forza is just too good for Hit the Road and Smooth Like Straight. And this turf course this summer at Del Mar has been so pro-closers. It's been an anti-speed course like I've never seen before. Time and time again, grass routes are won from off the pace. And that's how Mo Forza runs. He runs well fresh. He's the fastest horse in the race. I'll be surprised if Mo Forza is not right there at the finish of the Del Mar Mile.
Well, and you know, there was one story, and I should have asked Peter Miller yesterday when we saw him. Maybe we'll see him later this morning. And, you know, Joel Rosario is coming to town, and I have to guess, even as accomplished as Flavian Pratt is, and he's had plenty of success on Mo Forza, if Barry was with us, something tells me Barry would have insisted that Joel get to ride Mo Forza back being in town.
I'm sure Barry will be tuned in watching this race from the great beyond. He'll be there in spirit, that's for sure.
Exactly. Well, it's just happy, just glad to get Mo Forza back in, you know, just back into the PPs.
Hey, Brad, it's Rick here checking in, sitting next to Steve for a second. And
yeah, hey.
We wanted to just say hi to you. And this is an interesting race here, the six-pack. We always talk about horses for courses, and not just on the dirt here. As you know, this turf course has just had some quirks, and we see a lot of horses over the years that run well everywhere and don't perform well here. But every one of these colts has a win over the track, so you know you can throw out that angle. Love your stuff about Mo Forza. Smooth Like Straight, I think, is the horse to beat going a mile. I really like that name. It reminds me of a name I saw a long time ago, Hot Like Sauce. I'm trying to figure out Smooth Like Straight. Love it. If you're looking for a play, there's another horse in here. The five horse Count Again, Phil D'Amato, kind of under the radar. Joe Bravo rides, has a couple of races that if some of these others falter, you're going to get a decent price on him. He has won a stake here last year, last November. He won the Seabiscuit. I like that, coming from well off the pay. So I wanted to just throw him in and you know, on a C ticket maybe as a shot. If the race falls apart, he could be coming. I had an interesting stat that I'm sure you saw too, Brad, because you're one of these, you look at everything. Of the 94 horses entered today, 51 of them are with seven trainers.
Wow.
So,
wow.
You know, you look at the Baffert, Bob Baffert, Baltus, Phil D'Amato, Mark Glatt, Richard Mandela, Mike McCarthy, and Peter Miller have 51 of the 94 races, so horses in the races. So you're going to see them sprinkled all over the place running against each other. But that's pretty wild.
No, that is wild, no doubt about it. And, you know, with regards to the Del Mar Mile, I think all six of these horses that are entered in this race, not only have they all won at Del Mar, I believe they're all graded stakes winners. So
yeah,
there's not really a true throwout in the race. Yes, Next Shares and Count Again, maybe they're a little bit of a reach, but on their best day, they have run races that make them competitive. So this is a good, solid field, and a good horse is going to win this. I think the best horse, obviously, is the favorite.
Let's turn to the only non-stake in the sequence, Brad Free, with us as we come to you live from Del Mar and the always popular and fun to lay eyes on Lava Man, making a morning visit here to the paddock as he escorts and helps train the young Doug O'Neill runners. Let's go to this eighth. It's a 7/8 allowance, and this, to be honest, Brad, I have not looked at this yet, so let's get your opinions.
Well, it's a wide open competitive deep race with 10 starters that are going 7 furlongs, and just right off the bat, I got to say, I'm not in love with the favorite at all, and that's the program favorite anyway. Number 2, Dream Shake, early this year, was one of the top 3-year-olds in California, but his last 2 starts have left a lot to be desired. He completely misfired in the Woody Stevens, and then in the Oceanside Stakes, he was up close to the pace, and he backed up. The only reason I'm a little bit reluctant to throw him out entirely is that the Oceanside has become a surprisingly productive race. I don't have the stats in front of me, but I believe that 3 horses from the Oceanside won their next start, and 2 others came back to finish 2nd in their next start. So Dream Shake was in the hunt until deep stretch in the Oceanside. Now he's backing up to 1 turn. But his last 2 starts, neither one of those 2 efforts are anywhere close to what he was doing early this year when he finished, you know, he dazzled in his debut, winning by more than 4 lengths, and then 3 successive in-the-money finishes in graded stakes races, including the Santa Anita Derby and the Pat Day Mile, in which he gave Jackie's Warrior a battle. But to me, Dream Shake is a mystery. Blinkers are off. He's back doing what he does best. But I'd rather side with some in-form horses, and there are 2 here. Both first off the claim by Doug O'Neill, and I don't see any reason why number 7, Positivity, and number 8, Little Bit of Metal, listed 4-1 and 6-1. Both these razor-sharp Del Mar horses for courses are moving up in class in sharp form. They're drawn well near the outside, and I like these 2 at a price, Positivity and Little Bit of Metal, specifically Positivity. I know that he only defeated 3-year-olds, and now he's facing older for the first time, but this guy is absolutely razor sharp. He's 2-for-3 at Del Mar, and Little Bit of Metal, he beat older 32 claimers last time out, his 6th career win, and now 3-for-6 at Del Mar. So I like the 2 Doug O'Neills, Positivity and Little Bit of Metal, and we're going to get a little bit of a price on both because this is a deep field of 10, a large field of 10, and even number 1, Risk and Reward, up on the front end has a shot to possibly steal the race. But I go for 7 and 8, Positivity and Little Bit of Metal.
I'm glad you mentioned Risk and Reward, too, because, you know, came down with a three-year-old debut early in the meet and breaks the maiden pretty stylishly, solid fig. And if this Frosted Colt moves forward for Speedway, Speedway homebred, actually, Frosted out of Shea Jolie. I thought Risk and Reward did have a look, and Baffert being a little conservative with him, probably, hopefully, you know, looking toward the Malibu as a long-term goal.
Yeah, if he's
Real quick here, Dream.
If he's good enough to win the Malibu, if he's Malibu caliber, then he should be competitive in this one other van on Saturday. I liked his maiden win. I mean, how could you not? Wire to wire with a big number, an 89 buyer, 6.5 on Thoroughgraph. So he's got a shot up on the front end. Risk and Reward does, no doubt.
Quick comment on that Dream Shake. Probably the best and the worst thing that's happened to him was winning that maiden race first time out, and he beat the, you know, the next greatest horse to come along. And can you remember who that horse was that he beat?
Life is Good.
Bezos. I forgot. Right? We forgot already Bezos. The next greatest horse. So coming off that win, I mean, he was forced to, you know, as it happens out here in Southern California, you got to go right into the playoffs, so to speak, and you know, hitting Greatest State Company right away. And so I'm glad to see him take a deep breath, step back into the allowance company, little bit of a class breather, and I mean, he could be much the best in here. I come up with a Mark Ladd horse that scary fast smiles being maybe the speed of the speed if it ends up to it. But I think that the class relief on Dream Shake is really gonna help him here.
Well, it really should. And even though he finished sixth or eighth in the Oceanside, he was still in the battle in deep stretch. So I might be overly critical with regards to Dream Shake, but when a good horse finishes off the board in two consecutive races, to me, it's a potential signal that maybe it's time for a little bit of a freshening. Having said that, as I said earlier, three horses from the Oceanside won their next start. Two of them did, in fact, finish second. So he's dropping in class out of a very productive three-year-old turf stakes.
Turn to the ninth, third leg of this pick six sequence. Brad Free with us from the form, and the grade one, Delmar Oaks. Feels like there's some outfits that are kind of taking a shot. You've got Chad Brown sending in Sal Cumin's homebred, the Fluffy Sox filly, coming out of the Lake George. And then you've got kind of a fascinating collection of you know, experienced stake horses. We've got a European import from Jessica Harrington's barn. Kind of a shuffle the deck group, Brad.
Yeah, it usually is a good race, the Delmar Oaks. They usually get a big field, and it's usually competitive. And for the last 10 years, it's been largely dominated by East Coast shippers. East Coast shippers have won five of the last 10 Delmar Oaks, and I don't see any reason why that's going to change this year. I also don't see why Fluffy Sox is 4-1. I think that she's going to get bet down. I think she's the most probable winner. She's making her fourth start of her campaign. And by the way, she finished second last time out in the Lake George. The filly who defeated her, Technical Analysis, runs earlier Saturday in the Lake George at Saratoga. And fortunately, if you're not sure about Fluffy Sox and you want to see Technical Analysis and see how she did, she's 6-5 in the Lake George Technical Analysis. That race is going to be run, the Lake George, before the pick six sequence at Del Mar begins. So we'll have at least a little bit extra clue with regards to the form of Fluffy Sox. And I expect Technical Analysis to win the Lake George to validate the form of Fluffy Sox. And we know that Fluffy Sox likes the Del Mar Turf Course. She shipped out here last
That's
fall
right.
to win the Jimmy Durante.
That's right.
And I think she's just the best filly in the field. And no disrespect at all toward Going Global or Madone, who finished 2-1 last time out in the San Clemente. Going Global, I know that she can get a mile 1/8 because she did it twice during the Santa Anita Winter Meet. As for Madone, not sure that the extra furlong does her any favors. And strangely enough, the San Clemente, the one-mile San Clemente that Madone won last time out, has been surprisingly counterproductive with regards to the Del Mar Oaks. The San Clemente is a prep for the Del Mar Oaks, but I think there's been only one San Clemente winner in the last 20 years, that was Evening Jewel, to come right back and repeat in the Del Mar Oaks. A mile on grass to a mile and one-eighth on grass are two completely different scenarios. And I suspect, I could be wrong, I suspect that Madone might be a little bit vulnerable at this extra distance, whereas going global, if you can give her a pass for her most recent start, this time you're going to get 9-5 on going global. So I like Fluffy Socks on top over going global, and those to me are the two principles in the Del Mar Oaks.
Let's press forward because I have no argument there at all, and let's get to the late double, and that is the Classic and the Handicap. There are Breeders' Cup slots, and of course the respective races will be run right at this oval, the Breeders' Cup Classic and the Breeders' Cup Turf. And you know, I've been saying since Tuesday, Brad, that There may not be overwhelming star power to this Pacific Classic, but there are some solid, talented horses in here, and one of them is going to come away with the top prize out of this.
Well, one of them is going to be winning a Grade 1 in North America for the first time. And we have a field of nine and not a single North American Grade 1 winner in the entire field. I mean, that's okay, but you have to wonder, you know, how would Nix Go or Maxfield stack up against this Pacific Classic field? How would Essential Quality and or Hot Rod Charlie, how would they compare to this field? Well, it doesn't really matter on Saturday. They're not in it. And we have a good, solid field of nine. You're right. There are no superstars yet. Maybe there is one. Maybe Express Train is emerging as the legitimate leader of the handicap division. I'm not sure about that because the fact is Royal Ship defeated him two starts back. But Express Train ran super, finishing third in the Gold Cup at a mile and one quarter, two starts back. He did not get away all that well. He lost position on the first turn. He was wide throughout, and he finished third by more than four lengths. But he came right back to win the San Diego in pace-pressing fashion, his third win from four starts at Del Mar. And I love Express Train's running style. He is a forwardly placed runner, but he does not require the lead. And I think that's important because if you look at the pace scenario of the Pacific Classic, I suspect that Independence Hall, adding blinkers and coming in off a four-month layoff, he really has only one chance in this race, and that's to take the track and try to wire the field. I don't think he'll get a mile and one quarter, but he should set the pace, in my opinion. And that puts Express Train in the ideal spot, sitting second or third, with maybe Tis a Magician forwardly placed as well. And Express Train is going to get the all-time greatest trip, sitting just off the pace. He can get a mile and one quarter. At least he ran well twice at a mile and one quarter, third in the Gold Cup, second in the Big Cap. And this guy is good. He loves the track. He's training lights out. He's become a lot more professional as an older horse. He doesn't get spooked in the paddock. He comes in like an old pro, and he's turned out to be an old pro. So he's 3-1. If he starts at 3-1 Express Train, he'll be the highest odds favorite in the 31-year history of the Pacific Classic. So it's kind of interesting that Express Train trying to validate his win in the San Diego. There are some good horses in here. Royal Ship is a good horse, a Group 1 winner from South America who can stay a mile and one quarter as well. You have Dr. Post shipping in for trainer Todd Fletcher. Tis a Magician backing up from a mile and a half to a mile and a quarter. But to me, Express Train is, you know, he's relatively solid. I'm not going to say he's a slam dunk, but he enters with a lot of attributes. Tactical speed, speed figures, proven class, ability at the distance, and that all-important horse-for-course record. Four starts at Del Mar, three wins, 1 second for Express Train.
What one thing I wanted to point out, there's one horse in here that hasn't won a stake. Only one, which shows how evenly matched the field is, and that's the Railhorse Tripoli. John Sadler, who's won two of the last four runnings of this race, so probably was saying, you know what, if we got a horse in the barn that we can point to this race, this was it. Probably had this race in mind for Costa Hironas and trying to score again. Went back and just watched the race, the last last time, the San Diego. He had, Tripoli was wide going into the first turn, forced up one of those crazy positions where he's just way out, you know, fanned out there. He stayed wide the whole time, turning for home. He put in a nice burst about the eighth pole, hung maybe a little bit at the end as the express train went by on the inside. You know, at a little bit of a price, he's 5-1 in the program. I thought it'd be a little bit higher. He's going to drift up a little bit. If the race falls apart and he can get the mile and a quarter, no reason why he can't. I like that little burst I saw last time. Perfect prep race in the San Diego, which has been a real good prep for this over the years. You know, take a look at him if the price drifts up. If he's 9-2 or something, I'm not great. But if he drifts up to, you know, 7, 8, 9-1, might be worth a look. And the oddball horse, Dr. Post, I only oddball because a lot of these have been facing each other, you know, here and again.
Fresh face.
Joel comes in. You know, Todd doesn't just throw a horse on a plane at all. Come off that, having to be there that day at Monmouth Park when he ran impressively. Didn't beat a whole lot. Beat a nice group of, journeyman stake winners. But, Dr. Post coming in, just the new face in here, I think might have a shot as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting to hear you chat about Tripoli Hammer. He actually has the best thoroughgraph number among the seven California-based horses. Best last-out thoroughgraph. He got a 2.5 last time out. Thoroughgraph obviously incorporates ground loss into their figures. And he ran a faster race on thoroughgraph than express train. So it's really not that much of a reach. Tripoli is good. He's getting better. And we've seen John Sadler a couple years ago. He took an allowance horse, higher power, and dominated the Pacific Classic with a horse that wasn't supposed to be this good. Maybe Tripoli is kind of trying to follow suit. Sadler won with higher power. He also won a couple years ago with Accelerate. So Tripoli is not that crazy, to be perfectly honest. And he is a contender that scares me. I didn't pick him in the top three, but he enters with a legitimate shot.
Let's turn, Brad, to the nightcap, the Del Mar handicap, and a big full field. And this is a very interesting race. You got some very familiar faces and accomplished horses, and then you've got some interesting strangers, and even a horse like Crossfire Hurricane, second North America from Michael McCarthy, who you got to respect immensely. McCarthy also handling Masterpiece, the Chilean that Chad Brown has had on the East Coast. And Master of Foxhounds, I haven't looked at morning lines yet. Master of Foxhounds, I put a big dollar sign question mark next to him. Some thoughts on the co-feature.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, hopefully we're all 5-for-5 in the pick six going into the final race. And I guess the question is, how many do you need to feel safe? There are two logical horses in the race. I think that Arklo actually could potentially go favored over United. Arklo, he's a Brad Cox trainee shipping into Del Mar again. The last time he was here, he won the Grade 2 Hollywood Turf Cup. I think he might be a better horse than United. I'm not positive about that, and I'm using them both. But I prefer Arklo, who had an excuse last time out. He stumbled, he got cut up, and it was a toss-out race. But this guy is a gem of consistency, Arklo. We know he likes the Del Mar Turf course. We know the same thing about United. He's started 3 or 5 times at Del Mar on grass and won 3, finished second twice. And he won the Eddie Reed last time out over Smooth Like Straight. I thought that 1/1/8 might be a little bit shorter than United prefers, and he won the race anyway. 1 3/8 is in his wheelhouse, and United and Arklo are the two principals in this race. But you mentioned a long shot. He's Master of Foxhounds, 8-1 on the morning line. And he actually ran a very respectable race in the Manhattan in early June. He actually loomed up wide into the stretch like he was going to do some damage. And then he just got outclassed late at 38-1. I had a couple dollars on him that day just for a smile. And I talked to Baltus a couple days later, trained by Richie Baltus, Master of Foxhounds. And I said, man, your long shot ran super. He goes, yeah, he ran well. I'm proud of him, et cetera. Next stop, Del Mar Handicap. That was in early June, so here we are. We're 2.5 months down the road, and here's Master of Foxhounds fresh into the Del Mar Handicap, a race that he has been pointed for specifically. He'll fire his best race, and I think he's live at a price. I also am intrigued by number one Media Blitz at 30-1. His win last time out in two other than earned a modest figure, but visually it was impressive. And I've seen horses go from two other than straight into graded stakes in California. In fact, United did it a couple years ago. He won a two other than, and two starts later, he gave bricks and mortar all he could handle in the Breeders' Cup turf. So a couple of long shots, Master of Foxhounds and Media Blitz, but the race goes through the program favorite United and number eight Arklow.
I'm going to bring Hammer in, but I also note that Rosario lands on Red King, who won this race a year ago and hasn't won since. But Rosario, just elevates, it seems, horses like this. Recently ended up on Media Blitz. Feels like D'Amato and the Little Red Feather team may have reached for Ron Anderson and Rosario here. So I Rosario's presence alone had me considering Red King as well. Hammer.
You mentioned Phil D'Amato. He's down here in the paddock and with a couple of his runners, watching them circle the paddock. And I see Dave Hoffman's over here, who has won in the race as well, award winner. So I don't know if award winner's out here, and I don't know which one's Phil D'Amato's here. But they're here doing their schooling. Stake horses need schooling, too, and they're here just kind of checking out the scene. Great race to finish up with. I'm glad to see them, step out and put the stake race as the last. And, you didn't mention Acclimate. I don't know. Sometimes he gets out there and he lulls him to sleep on the front end. Not sure if that's going to happen here because it looks like there's a lot of pressure. Like Arklow a little bit. He really didn't mention too many of the other Phil D'Amato trained horses who, he does very well in here. He's got four of them. Say the Word on the Outside has some races that could be effective here. He definitely won the Elkhorn at Keenan, which lifted my eye a little bit, and then turned back to a mile and a mile and an eighth, which maybe not be his best go. So Say the Word on the Outside, I'm going to give a little bit of a look at a price. And, going into this, let's hope, if we are alive, Brad, that we've got four or five of these, because this could be a great finisher.
Well, you might need four or five in this race, but if you have to play on a budget, I would suggest that the two favorites are relatively solid in this spot.
Brad Free, everybody, and the lead analysis for the Southern California Circuit. For the Daily Racing Forum, we'll talk to Jay Pribman in a little bit as well. Brad, thanks so much. Look forward to seeing you here tomorrow.
I'll see you guys tomorrow. Good luck. Thanks.
Brad Free, everybody, with a comprehensive look, and that should have you in good stead as we bring in the new official voice of Sam Houston Race Park, Nick Tamaro. Good morning. Congratulations.
Good morning. Thank you, Steve. I suppose you can. What I can say to everybody is that I've now tried enough things in racing to see if I'm actually good at any of them. So you can add race calling to the rest of them. But I did sort of feel obligated. I was talking to Travis Stone last night, and I said I almost feel obligated to tweet. Let everybody know, like, hey, I did actually see this for the last 6 weeks there, so it's not as if this is some, wants publicity on, as if I'm some kind of star that they would get attention for allowing it to the booth. But very exciting. It was nice to see the news come out, and Martha Clausen and I had a long talk on Wednesday, getting her story ready, and it was really nice to see everybody's been very, very kind and gracious about it. And I suppose if I've done a little right in racing, from there are days certainly where I've done a little right from a gambling standpoint, I've done right in terms of being able to join you and handicap and give people ideas about racing. And I've always tried to be gracious and humble and recognize that, the game is a big thing, and those of us that are lucky enough to do anything associated with it really are tremendously fortunate. So I'm really looking forward to the opportunity. I laughed because in the middle of the night, I woke up and I had a dream that it was Houston Ladies Classic Day, and I not only forgot my binoculars, but I walked into the booth when they were halfway down the backstretch for the first race.
I love it. Well, from from all angles, this is a great scenario. You being a Houston native and resident, and essentially the opportunity to to call and not necessarily have to go on the itinerant route, with a young family, and it just feels like a perfect situation. And imagine that there'll be more handicapping and conversations with some of the some of the really good punditry that Sam Houston has incorporated into their program. So from every vantage point, we're excited for you and excited for everybody that has latched on to SHRP as part of their wagering menu option, whether it's the quarters or the thoroughbreds.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, Sam Houston was obviously given, the Texas Tracks were given a huge opportunity late in, early in 2019, to get some additional purse money by a tax that was diverted from a different place that it was going to. It's not really a subsidy. So it was, what Sam Houston has done, what Lone Star's done, is they've taken the ball and run with it. And I think the racing product has improved by leaps and bounds the last couple of years. I know they're in an effort now to recruit new barns. And last year, stall applications were in excess of 1,500 for a track that has, I think, around 1,150 stalls. So I think we'll see something similar happen this year. And it's very exciting. They've added racing dates. There were 32 racing dates in 2018 at Sam Houston. There will be 50 live thoroughbred dates in 2022. So that shows, what's gone on. And undoubtedly, Jessica Paquette coming on board last year and helping has sort of, helped get her into additional work at Colonial, and everybody sort of seeing how good she is at that and how, what a skilled interviewer she is and handicapper. And Trey Stiles, of course, who's qualified for the NHC.
Right.
I think every time it's actually happened, has been doing a lot of work handicapping on television as well. So, and of course, Martha will be around. So yeah, it's a good group of people. And I think that Sam Houston, not so quietly, is becoming a very prominent winter signal. And I think there's a lot of people out there that recognize the importance of the low takeout horizontal wagers, and I think there are a lot more things in store that are going to be good for horse players coming from Sam Houston. And of course, I'm referring to things well beyond to the voice that they'll have to listen to when they watch and wager on the races.
And Tam, 1215, and boy, do you have to actually? You may have to maybe change that to NTAM SHRP or something, right? Or is there going to be a how are you going to handle that?
I'm telling you, I may have to. If I had known, I would have probably gone with a more mainstream address when I started this.
Yeah, who knew, right?
And it was actually you. It was you who told me that you're like, you need to sign up for Twitter. So you need to get on there because we can talk about. We can promote your account. And so here it is. I followed the advice, and
And look at
later,
you now.
almost 10,000 followers, right? And I tell people that don't really understand racing sometimes, and I'm like, look, you got to understand, there are a lot of degenerates out there. We're a good fraternity.
Well, we'll dive right in and get some opinions on the cross country tomorrow. Things are a mess weather-wise and condition-wise back at Saratoga, and I know they'll do everything they can to keep the Lake Placid on tomorrow. I can't imagine that conditions are going to be what they're going to be, but
I guess depending on how much it rains today and tomorrow afternoon when there's a forecast, they're running a race on the Mellon turf today, which I'm very surprised by. But
all right, so they must be happy with it. All right.
So yeah, right now the forecast is not for any rain today, but it also looks like there's really not going to be any sun. And then tomorrow, the chances of PM thunderstorms have sort of crept up. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see. I would imagine the Lake Placid gets run on the turf pretty much without any doubt. The thing is that to remember also is that the Mellon rail is at 27 feet, and it's going to come down to zero next week.
Right.
So they're going to run on turf in this race today and over the weekend that they probably won't touch again, aside from maybe some wide rallying turf sprinters the rest of the meet. So we'll hope for the best.
We'll look at the Lake Placid and the Alabama, and then swing through the three races here at Del Mar. Nick, dive in.
Yeah, Lake Placid is a race that looks on paper like it should be dominated by technical analysis. You know, she was a crazy overlay in the Lake George, and you and I were talking about that after it happened, I think last month. She sat right, had a very, very nice trip, got a very, very good ride from Jose Ortiz, and ended up pulling clear late. Looks like this is just really her race to lose. The Lake George from top to bottom was a far deeper and more competitive race than this one is. I think as far as other options go, I want to use two horses that are going to be slight prices, Love Struck and Ego Trip. I think their Ego Trip, of course, is a maiden, but has really run two, almost winning caliber races in her two prior starts, including a maiden race on July 24th, where she absolutely flew late following a bad break from the gate. Not all that surprising for a horse with the Euro background to not break well, but she's a horse I think that still has plenty of upside. So I think I would use the 3 and 5 as backups. There's not really any pace to speak of in here. Spanish Love Affair is likely to be on the lead, but at the same time, I think technical analysis will be sitting right off of her, so I'm not really worried about somebody sneaking away and wiring this field. And, the Alabama has been billed as a Coaching Club American Oaks rematch, and that's really probably not fair because there are horses in here that really bring forth some quality outside of just those two. I mean, you're talking about Crazy Beautiful, Will's Secret are both graded stake winners, so is Clairiere. And for that matter, so is Army Wife, now having won two graded stakes in a row. And the interesting thing about it is the only non-graded stake winner in the field is probably the most influential horse in the race, and that's Played Hard.
Right.
Who I don't think is good enough to win, but, you're talking about a mile and a quarter race with one real speed horse and Luis Saez riding. And, if you're not at least considering the possibility that Played Hard can take this field a distance, I think you should probably let it enter into your head. I do think when push comes to shove, Malathat is going from being the hunted to the hunter, and she's obviously still the favorite, but when you have to do the dirty work on the front end and it's not really your style and you're given no breathers or opportunities to get a little bit of rest along the way, then things like what happened in the Coaching Club American Oaks happen. I'll be honest, I'm going to be shocked if Maracuja beats Malathat again. I thought that Maracuja's one chance to beat her was last time. She got a great ride from Ricardo Santana Jr. He rode such a tactically perfect race, and I just don't see that happening again. I think Malathat ultimately wins. I'm going to play a big 6-5.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up the Phil Bauer entrant in here. And, of course, Phil, his horses have all been running well for Mr. Rigney coming here, and including Played Hard. And I've got three words to deliver in her direction. Embellish the lace. If for anybody that sat and watched as Tony Dutrow's filly wired that Alabama, 4 or 5 years ago, 6 years ago, maybe. That's when I looked at those PPs, I thought, ooh, embellish the lace.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's the kind of horse that you think of when you see it. The concern, of course, is that this horse might not be quite that good, but Embellish the Lace's past performances really were not much more impressive than what you'll find here for Played Hard. And one thing you can say is that Played Hard is clearly a horse that has gotten better as the races have gotten longer. Yes, I mean, this is what we talk about when it comes to pace so frequently. When horses can get isolated leads, going two turns on the dirt, they get brave. And that's exactly what happened last time. Worth noting, of course, that among the vanquished behind her was Ice Princess, who came back and ran a very nice race yesterday. Played Hard is also out of a dam who's half to well-armed. And Helsinki. So there is a lot of distance pedigree here. I know she won at a mile and an eighth. It's sort of irrelevant to talk about pedigree for a horse that's just going an additional furlong. But there are not a lot of concerns about her getting the distance. It's just going to be a matter of whether she can establish an easy enough lead to avoid getting into any kind of battle and really having the maximum amount of energy left at the quarter pole when she's confronted by, the likes of Malathat and the other finishing types.
There's the Saratoga Stakes, the Lake Placid, 5:39 post, 6:13 for the Alabama, and then you sit back and wait for the California action. We just heard from Brad Free, Nick, and we're going to hear from Jay Privman next, the 9th, 10th, 11th, and really three fun races to fill out this cross-country pick five.
Yeah, very, very interesting races, and I'm sure you're getting settled. And I'm sure, are you enjoying your first summer Del Mar trip?
How could we not? Yes.
It's an amazing place. And I remember when we were talking about this, I told you, you know, having been in the fall, it's a completely different place in the summer.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty tough to beat. But these races came up terrific. I was looking through them this morning, and was very, very impressed with the quality of the field. I think the Del Mar Oaks is an interesting race because I actually think there are quite a few horses who can win this race. I really don't think that this is as simple as Going Global or Madone, who every time I see this name, I hear every Italian relative I've ever had yelling Madone. But you know, this is a horse that's obviously got a ton of quality. One thing that this race doesn't really have is any speed. It's a very, yeah, very heavy on late running types, and I think that makes the two inside horses interesting, and I'm going to use both of them in the cross-country pick five. Closing Remarks and Havanika. Havanika came back from a long layoff to wire a lesser field last time, but that was a very solid performance, I thought, off the lengthy layoff. Yeah, she loses her jockey as Pratt goes to Going Global, but I don't think that's much of a concern. I think that I'm hopeful that the same aggressive tactics are used that were that day. And, you know, Closing Remarks, there's an argument to be made that she got outmoved by Going Global a little bit in the Providencia, probably could be dangerous with a bit better trip than she had in the Senorita. So she's a horse that I would end up using. Fluffy Sox is going to take a lot of money in here, and, you know, I think she has a real chance, but I don't know if I'm all that wild about taking Fluffy Sox coming from well off the pace at a mile and an eighth against, you know, reasonable competition. She's not really that good, and I think she's going to be overbet because, obviously, Chad Brown has done exceptionally well shipping horses out to California in the past, but and then, the variable here, and I really don't have any kind of great insight, it looks like her form is a little bit lesser than, you know, our grade two and grade three types, but Soaring Sky is a horse, obviously, that some are going to, you know, want to pay a little bit of attention to. Nice to see Jessica Harrington continuing to participate in American racing as heavily as she has. So that looks like a really fun race to me. I mean, granted, everybody listening right now, you're going to get better opinions on this California races from Brad and Jay, but I'm going to probably use some combination of those five. I'm going to make my three main horses, though, the inside three, Going Global, Havanika, and Closing Remarks.
Interesting, and I didn't bring this horse up with Brad, but as you talked, and I was kind of poking around, there's a mid-pack runner type in here coming out of the San Clemente that I'm going to want to go back and watch that replay. Tetragonal, Baltus. And she's kind of I think she's moderately interesting and attended, you know, in that allowance win at Santa Anita in May. It kind of stayed close to a slowish pace, and that was with Pratt, and then Bravo rode her okay, it seems. I gotta look at that again. I really didn't notice. I didn't notice this one first time around, so I'm going to want to go back and look again. 12-1 to Tetragonal. So it's just a thought. Pacific Classic, Nick.
I saw the morning line for this race and the names, and saw, of course, some of the comments afterwards that really didn't have any star power. And, you know, for what it lacks maybe in star power, it certainly has in being competitive. I can't really figure out, I guess, to me, the main thing that you wanted to try and determine was if there was a real excuse for Royal Ship's performance in the San Diego. I guess there's has to be a little bit of concern that maybe he has some kind of issue with Del Mar, because he ran these two really good races at Santa Anita in the Californian and the Hollywood Gold Cup, and his two Del Mar efforts since coming stateside, at least on the dirt, they've just been okay. I mean, they've not been bad. Obviously, he ran much better in the San Diego than he did in the Native Diver last year, so... I mean, if he runs either of those two Santa Anita races, then he's going to be very tough. Express Train feels like a logical and deserving favorite. One thing, I think, one potential edge for him is that it doesn't feel like there's a ton of speed in here, and he's going to be somewhat forwardly placed. I think that he lost contact with the field early a little bit in the Gold Cup, and that certainly hurt, but a little bit more aggressive ride is going to put him squarely in the mix. I also felt as if Dr. Post was a horse that, you know, I don't want to hold. He was awful in that mile, and almost unbelievably so. And so I want to give him another chance. I want to just kind of pretend that that race never happened. And the fact that he came back and ran so quickly, and one thing about him in the Monmouth Cup is that if you're a Timeform US believer, and I am, he ran a very, very fast race last time. And he was a horse that was never really that far, never that far off the pace. The pace in there was solid for the distance, and he just ran start to finish. But the problem is it was against Knight Ops and Bankett. So that's the worry. I think you still have to use him. I'm going to use him. I'm going to use Royal Ship. I'm going to use Express Train. Those are going to be, you know, kind of my main horses. I know it's not a particularly clever opinion. I know they're the three morning line favorites, but I think you need all three in order to get through. I'm going to be pretty narrow at the beginning of it, so it gives me a little bit more flexibility. I wanted to find a long shot I liked a little bit. I don't really think that Cupid's Claws is the most ridiculous horse. He might not be good enough to beat these horses. He might just be more of a placing chance, but he's going to be moving late, and I think that, you know, the distance probably is a little shorter than what he needs in order to be successful, but he's a horse who can get a piece of this.
Well, and Umberto Rispoli lands there as well. And the other price that came up with Brad and with the Hammer was Tripoli down inside as well. That was between Express Train and Royal Ship in the San Diego. So, what it lacks in you know, a grade one winner, one of them is going to be a grade one winner after the race, 9:30 on Saturday night. And that gets us to the finale and a really intriguing Del Mar handicap.
Yeah, I caught the tail end of what Brad was saying to you about this race, and I agree that the two favorites look like, you know, the two best horses or the two most trustworthy horses, but, I mean, there are just way too many interesting horses here to you know, not at least try somebody else. I would not use Arklow in this race. I know that you know, he won the Hollywood Turf Cup, different circumstance. I don't really like Arklow in a situation where he's coming from well off of it at a mile and 3/8. I think that he's a horse that's a little bit better at a mile and a half, a little bit better, you know, maybe in a situation where he's not quite so far back. And I think he has generally struggled specifically with Florent Giroux when he's tried to come from well off the pace. I know he won the Louisville Handicap. He would have won it at a mile and 3/8 also. I don't want to take 5-2 on this horse who's going to be very overbet because of his East Coast running lines and some trouble that he got into last time. So, it is an interesting race for many reasons, one of which is that it should have a real pace. There's no doubt that I think they're going to go pretty quickly. You know, I thought the horse that was interesting at a good price in here was Say the Word. I know his post stinks, being on the far outside in an 11-horse field going pretty short run for the first turn. But, you know, this is what he's good at. He's good at going long. So I'd rather try him getting back to what, you know, might really be his ideal trip. Joe Bravo's had a very, very good meet. I was very, you know, surprised and impressed at his numbers, given that he relocated for this meet. So, yeah, I wanted him. I wanted to try Master of Foxhounds as well. I just think he's running against significantly better horses in his last two starts, and this is a pretty significant class drop. And, you know, United seems to be a bit different horse maybe at Del Mar than elsewhere. He's a little bit better here, but, you know, he lost this race with no real excuse last time, and he's not a horse I think that you want to go wild trying to single or anything like that. So I'm going to use more price types in here. I hope to get alive to as many as possible. But Master of Foxhounds and Say the Word were the main two for me who felt like they had the most offer.
It's a terrific standalone race and a absolutely fantastic all graded stakes cross-country pick five. Jay Pridman is going to join us here momentarily, Nick, and as I wait for Jay, should mention, you know, we got the 15% takeout on this, retail only, and for those that didn't see the formal details that came out yesterday, Matt Hegarty, you know, filling in the blanks on the story that, you know, we kind of were hinting at in the last couple of weeks, the decision by Naira to exclude the groups, or in this case, have the groups force them to, the computer-assisted wagers, force them to finish their win wagers 3 minutes out from post time. And as a result, they took their ball and they are looking elsewhere. And so, you know, we mentioned with Dave O'Rourke and the past week and a half or so, you know, there has been very little late odds fluctuation in New York. And that it sure feels like a real positive. Some thoughts about, you know, what feels like a bit of a movement here for one of the horse playing community's biggest frustrations.
Yeah, you know, it seems like a very positive step in limiting, you know, the access of some of these things. It's funny to me, the CAWs and the computer wagering teams and groups and however you refer to them, they're sort of like the boogeyman, and they exist obviously, and we don't see who they are or exactly how they do it, but they have this tremendous impact on wagering, and they drastically affect the odds late, obviously, in the win pool. They affect every pool that they're involved in, and they're betting with razor sharp precision because that's what they've done in order to create a system that determines how exactly to do it. You know, I think if it was up to Dave O'Rourke, he'd probably cut the pools or the takeout in every pool by a point or two, but it's just not that simple because it's not NYRA's decision to make unilaterally. What NYRA can do unilaterally is limit the access of groups that are hurting and raising the effective takeout for everybody else.
Exactly.
So I think it's a very good effort on his part, and I just greatly appreciate it. And I think you've seen it. You know, kind of what you've seen is funny is that there have been a couple of sequences and situations and things that have gone on where win odds have not been consistent with multi-race payoffs, and it's because the win pool obviously is not being bet with the same efficiency because you don't have these, you know, tremendously huge bettors with a huge volume having a gigantic impact. So it's just an interesting dichotomy between the pools, obviously, that they are still in and the ones that they're not. It's obvious as far as the multi-race plays go that the ones that they're not involved in are extremely lucrative and they're still plenty liquid.
Nick Tamaro, I appreciate it. I will see you. We will be together in Vegas in a matter of days.
I can't wait. See you then, Steve. Thanks for having me, and have a great weekend.
The new official voice of the Sam Houston Race Park, Jay Pribman, joining us. And looking forward to seeing Jay, if not later today, then tomorrow. Jay, not such a shame about the weather right here at Old Del Mar. Good morning.
Good morning.
Jay, I have to start with a sad note, unfortunately, and I saw that you contributed appropriately to the tributes to B-Way News.
Yeah, Matt Hegarty and I, Matt did a lot of the early heavy lifting, and then I tried to give him some anecdotes to add to the story to just sort of flesh it out, because I think a lot of people know about all his accomplishments with, obviously, in business with Public Storage and in racing with Spendthrift Farm and all the top horses that he had over the years. But there was a lot of other things that he did and a lot of things about him that I wanted to make sure got conveyed in a final tribute to him in our paper, and that included, you know, just how much he enjoyed being one of the guys at the track. Before he had relocated to Kentucky, you know, he lived in California his whole life, and he was a regular at Clocker's Corner. He was very close with, for instance, Mel and Warren Studi, and a lot of the trainers that were part of the breakfast group there. And he enjoyed, you know, nothing more than being part of that group with, you know, Henry Marino and Barry Abrams. And that was not only at Clocker's Corner, but they'd gather again during the summers at the track kitchen at Del Mar. And he was just, you know, very approachable. I don't know too many, if any, other billionaires, but he was a very approachable billionaire, for sure. And, you know, the other thing that he did, though, that I think some of this is known, but there's much more about it, is how much he impacted medical care in this country,
yes,
particularly with, because of the sad situation with his son Parker and with childhood leukemia, but, you know, what he's funded and the developments that have been in that regard. And, you know, the people that he met in the medical community over the years allowed him to really sort of behind the scenes reach out and help a lot of people at the track get into places where they might not have been able to get into right away. I know he helped Rick Porter quite a bit with when he had a very dire diagnosis, get into a program in the Boston area. There's countless people in Southern California who he helped, particularly through USC, where he was a major donor, not only to the medical community there, but also to the athletic department. So, and he never sought any recognition for that. So that was those were some of the things I wanted to make sure got conveyed.
I appreciate it, and as the parade yesterday of voices that pay tribute to B-Way News, one of the things that was echoed repeatedly was his unwillingness to take any recognition, and that when he donated, when he went out of his way, he wanted it done anonymously. But it's pretty apparent, Jay, the flood of appreciation for those things, and there's going to be stories that'll keep coming out as the tributes continue.
No, very much so. I mean, he's had an incredible impact on not only the sport, but business and a lot of people's lives.
Well, and one other part of these conversations, looking forward to having Sid Fernando next week talk about the seismic impact that B. Wayne had on the stallion marketplace and on the breeding side, not the least of which was resurrecting Spendthrift to a prominent position. Prominent position on everybody's wagering menu this weekend, Jay, is Pacific Classic Day, and what a terrific card put together for the highlight of the season.
That's great. I'm really looking forward to it. Going to rest up today and be ready to go for tomorrow. Still trying to get all my strength back, but definitely after being out there yesterday, I need to I don't want to peek too soon.
Exactly.
Watch from home today and be ready for tomorrow.
Well, basically, kind of an easy breeze as opposed to a sharp blowout in anticipation of tomorrow. Let's start with the feature, and then we can talk about some of the other advances that you wrote. And as Brad Free pointed out, everybody in this field, Jay, looking for their first Grade One win.
Yeah, it's the same in the Del Mar Oaks as well. Both Grade Ones do not have any Grade One winners in them. But, yeah, in the Pacific Classic, significant race because it's a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Classic, which will be run at the same track and same distance in 3.5 months later. So it's a big race this year. And, I think Dr. Post is very alive in here. I think the California horses are good, but there's no killers here. And I like the move. It's very reminiscent to me of Vino Rosso when he came to the Gold Cup at Santa Anita and won that and then went on to win the Breeders' Cup. I don't know if he's quite of that quality, but I thought two of his three races this year have been good. He moved forward last time with the addition of Blinkers. He's won without Lasix like he did in the Westchester, and I think he's sitting on a very big race. The locals, obviously, you've got the main contenders coming out of the San Diego, of whom Express Train won that race, and I thought he ran well there, and I thought he ran really well in the Santa Anita Handicap. Just did get run down late by Idle that day, and I would expect him to run very big. So those are the two that I prefer.
Well, and that is a great point about Vino Rosso. And, of course, Joel Rosario gets to come with him, and Joel does not need a GPS system to find his way around this oval.
No, and he's won this race before, so he's quite at home out here.
Well, and in fact, you bring that up, Accelerate in 2018, and I had forgotten this. Doulahan in 2012, Joel Rosario landed for Dale Romans and won it. I completely forgot that Doulahan had won this race.
Yeah, we try and forget the Poly Track days at Del Mar.
just an aside. I have two. I have two halters that I. That are actually right in the kind of a tray underneath a oval coffee table in our living room, and actually between the two halters is your book, your Breeders' Cup book, and Del Mar at 75, also a Jay Privman title. And on either side, there's the deputy minister halter that John Parada really generously gifted me. And Doolahan, which is kind of an incongruous pairing. Oh, I love it. Well,
big chunk of money when you go to sell that.
I suppose I should, Jerry, I should really ask Jerry Crawford. If I'm sure there's somebody from Donegal that would treasure it even more than I do. So that now you've prompted me. Let's talk about the second of the Breeders' Cup winning your ins, and then we'll talk about the other stakes. And boy, the Del Mar Handicap is a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a terrific way to end the card. It's a big field. It's a competitive field. It ends the Rainbow Six for those who are inclined to play. But obviously the two main names in here are United, who's never finished worse than second in five starts at Del Mar, though he got upset in this race last year by Red King. But he's back in good form. As Eddie Reed was quite good. To run down Smooth Like Straight was a real accomplishment. And obviously, speaking of Donegal, Arklow won well here last year in the Hollywood Turf Cup. So he's at home here. He's well-traveled. He really doesn't need to take his track anywhere. I talked to Brad Cox yesterday. He said that their main goal has been the Kentucky Turf Cup, which he's won two of the last 3 years, and they're using this as a means to an end, and they might not have run in this race if it hadn't been for just sort of the unsatisfying way that the UN unfolded, where he really didn't get a chance to compete well because of the incident going into the far turn when he clipped heels. But he's back out here. So those are the two horses that will take the most amount of money. I'm intrigued by another horse here, though, that I'm going to gamble on, and that's Master of Foxhounds. I thought he ran very well behind United and Say the Word earlier this year, and I just think he's kind of unexposed, whereas, we know what United and Arco are, and they're very good. But I think there's still a little bit of blue sky with Master of Foxhounds, and his form's a little bit dirtied up from running against the, much better horses back east in May and June at Churchill Downs and Belmont, running against the likes of Colonel Liam and Domestic Spending and Tribune and Gufo and horses like that. And I just think he gets really, honestly, a little bit of class relief compared to those in here. And I think there's a chance for him to be better now. He's still pretty lightly raced. He's only been in this country for, not quite about a year since he arrived. Not a year since his first race in this country. And I just think he's kind of on the improve. It'll be a price. So I'm going to use him as well as the two obvious horses.
Master of Foxhound has come up repeatedly, Jay, and I'm very eager to use and include and feature in my plays too. And one of the under discussed stories is Kent DeSormo, healthy and focused and riding well.
Yes, no, he's definitely riding like the Kent DeSormo of old, and addressed issues that have impacted his life for decades, and it's really showing how much better he's doing now.
Let's talk about the other three graded stakes and start with the grade one, Jay. You referenced the Oaks, and there's a grade one three-year-old filly in this group somewhere.
Right. This is the Del Mar Oaks, as we were saying, like the Pacific Classic has a field of in a grade one. None of them have ever won a grade one. I think it's a really tough, wide-open race. Fluffy Socks is the horse I, focused on because she'd won out here in the Jimmy Durante, and she looks like she's cycling back to a good effort. I thought her race in the Lake George was perfectly fine behind Technical Analysis. But, she's no better in my mind than Madoni or, Going Global. I think going back out to a mile and an eighth will run well, and I think she might have needed her last start. That was kind of a means to an end. This is the race that they focused on. There's nothing wrong with Closing Remarks or Javanica. It's a really wide open race, and I'd go as deep as possible here. I don't think there's any real standouts. It's just going to really be dependent on who gets a trip.
I can't argue at all, and that seems like this is what the third time, or if I add in Brad and Hammer and Nick Tamaro and you and me, I mean everybody has got some different leans and some horses they want to include. Let's talk about the mile. And here's an interesting set of six. And Mo Forza's presence back for a five-year-old debut. Jay, obviously the central storyline.
Right. And he came off a layoff and won this race last year. And, all reports are he's training very well for his return, but this race came up very strong for it's a small field but a quality field. I'm a huge fan of Smooth Like Straight. She fires every time, and I thought Hit the Roads race last year in the Oceanside was terrific, and he's 2-for-3 here lifetime on this course, and he also runs well fresh. Whenever he's come off of a layoff, he's fired well, and I think you're going to see a big performance from him tomorrow. So those are three quality grade one type horses who are, I think, are all sitting on good races. And it's hard for me to differentiate between them. I mean, I guess if I had to lean, I'd lean slightly to Smooth Like Straight, but I'm not going to use him only when I know how well Hit the Road what he and Mo Forza are capable of doing. So this is a grade two race with legitimate grade one horses in it.
Should mention, too, before we talk about the Torrey Pines, watching the horses mill around behind the gate at York in the Ebor Festival, the Nunthorpe and Golden Pal, Even Money on the tote. And so we'll keep an eye on that for Wesley Ward and, of course, the Uncle Mo colt out of Lady Shipman. Frankie DeTorre aboard. And the Torrey Pines, here are the three-year-old fillies on the main track. And this is an interesting collection, too, that somebody's going to come out of here with graded stake credentials.
Right, a grade three, and nobody in here has ever won a graded race. There's a lot of horses in here who you're hoping are going to step up. I've really liked Lady Mystify's last couple of races. I realize she's gotten ideal trips on the lead, but I liked her win at Santa Anita when she won against Maidens. The fig came back pretty light, and she needed some time off after that, but she came back and won nicely in a pretty decent first level allowance race. There's a couple other decent horses that she beat that day, and I think she's capable of sitting and finishing. There's a couple of stretch out sprinters in here who I expect to be in front of her early. I like her best. There's certainly nothing wrong with Private Mission. She's going to stretch out, and all of her, she ran two good races and one race where she got hurt when she was an odds on favorite against Astute, and she needed a lot of time off after that and came back and won well. She should be able to stretch out, being in the mischief out of an unbridled mare. There's no reason why she shouldn't be able to get a mile here. So, and Forest Caraway came off a long way off and won nicely, but she's also improved in going two turns. So I'm going to take the horse that's proven going two turns. Might even end up because of the, I think Forest Caraway and Private Mission might take more money than Lady Mystify, and so I'm going to give a slight lean to Lady Mystify to sit the trip and finish it off.
Excellent. And as they continue to load and get ready to fly at York, Jay, two maiden races tomorrow of note. The opener for the fillies, the two-year-old fillies going 5.5, and then boys 5.5 in the fourth. There's some nice pedigrees. There's some horses with some expectations, including Mirasol runs back for Baffert and Clearview, the Arrogate out of Just Whistle Dixie. Anything special to note otherwise in the two-year-old races?
Yeah, in the fourth race, you might remember I mentioned to you about Forbidden Kingdom.
Yes.
And he ended up having to scratch out of his scheduled debut, and he's back in. And this is a tough race. There's some very well-regarded horses making their debuts against him, but I know that he's plenty capable, and he'd be an interesting horse, obviously, because of the Spendthrift connections. So he's one to watch, but there's a couple other well-regarded and expensive purchases in that race as well.
Jay Privman, can't wait to see you. Thank you so much.
All right, Steve. See you. Thanks.
Jay Privman, everybody, DRF, and let's tune in and pick up the call at
is Liberty Beach, and the red and white colours on the near side. Dakota Gold racing a solo path on the near side rail with Kea Moro next, followed by Emirati Anna. Bedford Flyer pushed along. Dragon Symbol the Grey urged to keep in touch. Behind these, and Moskil struggling. Suasa's off the pace, but she's travelling okay and is trying to pick up behind these leaders. You Better Believe It with a task on Chipotle's trying hard. Arecibo covered up by Jamie Spencer travels well, and Chilchill making an effort on the far side. Golden Powell has run his race here and taking over. It's Winter Power who's in front inside the final furlong, and she's streaking clear. She loves it here at York. Winter Power in the hands of Sylvester D'Souza as they race on up towards the line. Winter Power, a brilliant winner of the non thought. Emirati Anna in second place, then Dragon Symbol, followed by Chilchill Suasa, who never got the blow in, and then Liberty Beach.
Well, absolute, I don't want to call it a no-show, but Golden Pal was done a little past the midway point here and ends up, I think, probably seventh or eighth. Winter Power, Sylvester D'Souza, 12-1 for King Power Racing, Tim Easterby. So a disappointment for Golden Pal. We're going to take the break here, and our only one of the morning. We're only about 23 minutes behind. Let's take a quick break. Ernie Perry's going to join us from Woodbine next. Then DeRosa and Scully. And by the way, Big Scully did win yesterday at Saratoga. I thought that was going to be a natural. It was short price, but I forgot to mention that Big Scully yesterday. So we'll see if James bet Big Scully. Then top of the hour, Ron Gierkink from the Daily Racing Form, and we're expecting a visit with Joe Harper before we wrap up too this morning. Weekend preview brought to you by Twin Spires. We're coming to you from a little bit of a desultory Del Mar right now. The temperature's dropped. It's cooled, and it's still heavily overcast, but it seems like that's the MO. And then by late morning, the sun comes out, it warms up, and it's glorious. Back after this at the races, SiriusXM.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's Live Foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Thoroughbred horse racing returns to the home state of Secretariat when Colonial Downs in Virginia conducts its summer season with a new afternoon racing schedule and minimum daily purses of $500,000. The season runs from July 19th to September 1st with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Mark your calendars for Colonial Downs' signature event, the Grade 3 Virginia Derby, on Tuesday, August 31st. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs now running Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday afternoons at 1:45 p.m.
SiriusXM Sports presents...